Hi everyone, and welcome to this new episode of Guida Galattica per Fisioterapisti podcast. Today I'm really happy to welcome on our podcast Gioletta Belton. Hi Joe, and welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for accepting our invitation. As always, Joe, we start by asking our guests to introduce themselves to our community. So would you like to tell us a little bit more about your journey?
Sure, thank you. So as you said, my name is Joe Belton, and I guess you could call me a pain patient advocate. Most of the work that I do now is in the advocacy space and advocating for a better understanding of pain and better treatment of pain. And I came to this work through my own experiences living with chronic pain that started now almost 12 years ago when I was working as a firefighter paramedic in California in the US. I got hurt. I hurt my right hip, not doing anything cool though. I just stepped off the fire engine awkwardly and felt a twinge in my hip. And totally unexpectedly, that twinge led me on a path of ongoing worsening pain that didn't get better, that didn't respond to treatment like anybody expected, and that ultimately led to my medical retirement after I failed all the treatments. In the vernacular of healthcare, I failed all the treatments. They didn't fail me. But I did PT and injections and surgery and acupuncture and massage. I did everything, medications. I did everything. And the pain didn't resolve or get better. A number of years after the injury, or about a year after the injury, I had surgery. And went into a civilian position because that surgery didn't fix my pain. It fixed my anatomy, but didn't fix my pain. And I worked for another 2 years in that civilian position, still trying to figure out my pain and kind of the traditional healthcare landscape. And I didn't get better. So I ultimately medically retired from my fire department altogether and went back to graduate school. And I got my master's degree in human movement, but I studied pain science as my research focus. And it was in that study of pain science that I came to understand my pain much differently and started taking a different approach to how to manage it or live with it or deal with it. And that's that kind of path of medically retiring, going to school. I started writing about all my experiences on my blog, My Cup of Joe, and through that started meeting other people in the pain space, and I started going to conferences. I got to interview Lorimer Moseley when I was in graduate school and just kind of entered into this pain science world, and that's how I kind of ended up here today, almost 12 years later now.
Yeah, wow. It's an incredible story, And I think my next question is related to this, is related to how chronic pain changed your life and changed a lot of people's lives. And the first question is about the concept of acceptance. So how do you accept and understand your situation, your current situation with chronic pain? And then you fight the problem to move forward rather than passively accept it.
Yeah. And I think that it's so important how you led into that question about how much changes when we experience this ongoing pain that doesn't get better when you expect it to. If you had asked me to describe myself before this pain had happened, I would have said, I am a firefighter, because to me that encapsulated everything that I was. I was really active, really fit, really strong. I would run 7 miles on my off days. You know, my job itself was really physically demanding. And I was what we call a gym rat. Like as soon as I'd get off work in the morning, around 7:30 in the morning, I would go straight to the gym before I would go home and I would work out again. So I was very much that person, and I had been a lifelong athlete. And through that being an athlete, I had had a lot of injuries over the course of my life, and I had had surgery under anesthesia a number of times. Like, I've broken my nose 4 times and had to have reconstructive surgery twice, all in sports. I was hit by a car when I was 16 and had compound fractures in my leg that had to be repaired by surgery. So And I never had a pain problem with any of those previous injuries, any of those previous surgeries. I had never had a pain problem. So this really, really didn't make sense. And it was unacceptable at that time. You know, like it was not something that I could accept because I couldn't make any sense of it, especially during those 3 years when I was kind of in that traditional healthcare. And I was also in the workers' compensation system, which is a particularly terrible system, especially here in the United States. Nothing made sense then. You know, like who I was as a person was completely upended by this pain experience. And what I thought that I understood about pain was completely upended by this experience. Because I was a bit judgmental. Like I said, I was really strong and fit firefighter at this time. I ate clean. I did all those things that you're supposed to do to keep yourself healthy and out of pain or out of any lifelong problems. And then all of a sudden I was in this pain experience and I was like, but this shouldn't happen to me. I was doing all of the right things. I was doing all of the things that you're supposed to be doing. So everything about my life was upended and I was completely separated from my career that had defined me. You know, when I went off work on workers' compensation and I wasn't going to the station anymore, all of a sudden my life was completely upended. I had been used to, you know, working 24, 48, 72 hour shifts. So now all of a sudden being home all the time, that completely changed the dynamics of my relationship with my husband too. This is not what we were used to. So everything was up in the air and everything was really, really difficult and disorienting. And I didn't have any answers and I couldn't make sense of my pain. At that time, there was no acceptance in the mix. I couldn't accept where I was. It was unacceptable. Over time, when I came to understand pain differently, and I understood how many different things can influence the experience of pain, how many different things can perpetuate pain when you expect it to go away and it doesn't go away, how many things might contribute to that, I started to think about my own experiences differently. At first, there was a lot of cognitive dissonance. What I was learning in school, I was like, that makes complete sense. I can understand pain to be this biopsychosocial experience or this whole person experience where there's biological factors and psychological factors, and then all those environmental and contextual and social factors as well. I totally get how all of that can contribute to a pain experience, but I couldn't apply it to me for a long time. So it took time, like it took months, maybe even years for me to develop this understanding. I was also just learning it on my own. I didn't have a healthcare professional at that time kind of guiding me through it. Once I started understanding all of that differently and being able to apply it to myself, I could finally start to accept where I was, even if some of the things that happened in my care were unacceptable. You know, even some of the denial or the doubt of my experience or the accusations of malingering and things like that, that happened during the course of my care, those things are still unacceptable, but I could accept where I was. I could accept what had led up to it because not accepting it meant fighting reality, fighting what had already happened. And I didn't want to keep fighting reality. I didn't want to keep fighting pain because it was exhausting. I couldn't keep wishing for things to be different than they were because that didn't get me anywhere. And it just led to this exhausting, constant fight. So I came to a place where I could accept where I was without accepting any unacceptable things or condoning which is why I became an advocate. And I think those are really important distinctions. The acceptance was for myself to no longer fight reality and just be like, this is where I'm at. These are some of the things that led here. I have to accept that those things happen. I have to accept where I am. And also know that accepting where I am doesn't mean accepting it as my future. That the things that I do now are going to affect the trajectory moving forward. And I have some control over the things that I do now. So I, for me, for a long time, I fought this idea of acceptance because I thought of it as resignation, that you're resigning yourself to this experience, that it's this belief that that things are never going to get better, or that if they change, they're only going to get worse. Like just this sense of resignation and defeat and demoralization. And for me, that's not what acceptance is. Acceptance is just, this is the reality and I can't fight reality, but I can choose to do things that will alter my trajectory moving forward, and I can fight the things that I feel like I need to fight that led me to this advocacy work in the first place. I hope that makes sense. Like there,
yeah, absolutely.
That acceptance term can come with a lot of baggage, and there can be a lot of resistance to it, which I completely understand, because unacceptable things do happen to people. Like, it's really hard to be in some of the positions that people living with pain are in. So I can see why people would be resistant to, I'm not going to accept all of this, but it's more accepting, this is where I'm at. What do I do now? How do I move forward with this?
Exactly. And so then, why do you think pain is so misunderstood? And I'm not just talking about the general population, but also amongst like health professionals.
Yeah, I think that so much of it, and I think it all kind of trickles down, that we were talking about this before we started recording, that health professionals, you know, physicians, nurses, physios, they don't get very much training in their educational process or their training process about pain, especially chronic pain. I mean, even in recent surveys or recent studies that they've done, the amount of hours devoted to pain is really, really trivial compared to the rest of the programs that people are going through. And oftentimes it's elective. So people have to choose those classes if they get them at all. So I think that part of it starts with just our educational systems are really failing both patients and clinicians. And that needs to change. We know that pain, in particular chronic pain, is a huge global problem that is only growing, and that it has a huge impact on people's personal lives, you know, their lives, their selves, their ability to work and contribute and do all of those things that give their lives purpose and meaning, but also societally, it has huge impacts, economic impacts, productivity impacts. There's so many impacts, yet we're not teaching about it in training programs for healthcare professionals. So I think that is something that needs to be rectified. We need to change that. And I think because people don't have a very good understanding of pain that are supposed to be the experts in pain, that leads to misinformation or misunderstandings in the general public as well that don't get corrected. And if anything, they get reinforced when they see healthcare professionals that have the same beliefs that they do, that aren't reflective of current understanding of pain science or pain biology. So I think that there are so many different things we need to do. I think we need to do more public awareness campaigns about what pain is. And I think we can't just focus on the biology and the science either. We have to understand better the lived experience of pain, what people living with pain actually experience on a day-to-day basis, what they find helpful, what those beliefs are, so that we can start to come to a better shared understanding of what pain is and what to do about it.
Yeah, there are definitely more information now out for health professionals, but probably for general population, we have to do more, definitely. And so my next question is more about communication. And so traditionally, the biomedical approach was used to see a doctor or physio as the expert, and a unilateral direction where they were going to see this patient and try to fix the problem of the patient. But so what is the problem with this type of approach, and what do you think is the best way to communicate with patients in a practitioner-patient relationship?
Yeah, I think that's such an important question. And I think part of the reason we're where we're at, where pain is such a problem, is that kind of fix-it mentality that the healthcare professional can just go in and fix this person's problem through, you know, manipulation or, you know, some type of intervention or giving them exercises or self-management strategies, and that just fixes the problem and it goes away. But we know now that we're not just machines, that human beings are not just machines that get broken and you replace a part or you upgrade a part here or there and then things are fixed. That's not how we work. I mean, I learned that firsthand when I had my surgery on my hip, which my hip was totally reconstructed and my anatomy looks absolutely beautiful now, but that didn't fix my pain because that wasn't the totality of the problem. Yeah. So I think that fix-it mentality not only does patients a disservice, because then they're constantly searching for the fix, that holy grail that is going to solve all of their problems, but it puts clinicians in a really bad place too, because then if there's a patient you can't fix, who is to blame? It's either the patient's fault or it's the clinician's fault. And then it puts everyone in a bad situation. So I think that that mentality has contributed to some of our problems for both patients and clinicians, and leads to frustrations on both sides, and leads to blame and shame on both sides too. But looking at it more as the clinician is coming in, the physio is coming in with, you know, expert knowledge and all of this training to become the physio that they are, and all of this experience that they have working with people with pain or patients in general, they have this wealth of knowledge and expertise. But the patient is also coming in with a wealth of knowledge and expertise about their particular pain and how it is impacting their lives and what effect it is having, you know, on their ability to do the things that they love to do or that they want to do. They know their pain better than anybody because they're the only one that is living with it. We need both of those types of information. We need both of those forms of knowledge to really come to an understanding of this person's pain and what can be done about it. So it needs to be more a meeting of two experts that are then working together, collaborating together to identify, you know, what the challenges and problems are, and then work together towards finding solutions for what's going to help best for that particular person in this pain experience that they're having. Yeah. I think that would do so much more for both patients and clinicians too, because then you don't have all the responsibility of fixing a person. You know, it becomes a collaborative effort of solving this problem moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally agree. And you talked about this, the role of the patient within the obviously the physio patient relationship, but what do you think could be then the role of patients and their experience as experts of their problems in research?
Oh, that's such a great question, and I'm so glad that you asked. And it's something I didn't mention during my intro, but I am now part of my advocacy work led to me being co-chair of the Global Alliance of Partners for Pain Advocacy, which started as a task force for the International Association for the Study of Pain. And our whole mission and vision, everything is around integrating lived experience into the study and research and treatment of pain. And the reason for that is, like, our understanding of pain biology and pain science has exploded in the last few decades. We know so much more about, like, the sensory side of things and the biological processes that accompany pain. We know much less about the lived experience of pain, even though the IASP definition calls it a sensory and emotional experience, even though we understand it to be biopsychosocial and always subjective and always personal, we've done less to explore that actual lived experience. So I think by bringing in that lived experience of pain, by integrating the lived experience of pain into the study of pain, into the research of pain, we have a much broader understanding of what pain is, and perhaps a better insight into what questions we should be asking in research in the first place. Like, what really matters most to patients? What is most relevant to their outcomes? Not just clinical outcomes, which tends to focus on what matters most to the clinicians or the healthcare system. What actually matters most to the patients? And then working together just to come to a better understanding of what living with pain is like, so that we can come up with better solutions for those people, and having it be that same kind of collaborative environment that we were just talking about in the clinical encounter, and expanding that to these professional spaces too, and these research spaces as well, where people with lived experience are partnering in the research or collaborating in the research all along the research spectrum, from generating research agendas and research questions on through the actual studies themselves, and then disseminating and translating that knowledge to the public, which we were talking about earlier, such an important aspect of all of this too. And we can really, really improve our science communications or communications to the public by including the public in that process and developing what those messages might be or those formats might be for getting that information to a broader audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the next question comes from, well, obviously looking at your Instagram profile, all the amazing pictures, outdoors pictures that you post and beforehand, like off the record, you show me the view from your balcony, which is amazing. So you're surrounded by great nature and obviously how active you are and you've always been. So the question is about the role of being active and exercise in people with chronic pain, and also what was the importance of exercise for you? So what is like being active for you?
Yeah, and I want to separate those two things, because interesting research has found, qualitative research. This is another reason I think asking people with lived experience questions and involving them in research, because like exercise means something very specific to a lot of people. Like it means going to the gym. Like it might not mean their walk that they take with their dog. They see those two things very differently. So for me, like I said before, I was a gym rat. I would spend hours in the gym. I was one of those people that could be there forever. And I loved being there. I loved that environment. I would work out with a bunch of bodybuilders at the gym that I used to go to. And I would, you know, pride myself in how much I could lift and my form and all of that kind of stuff. So exercise, that kind of formal exercise where you're doing sets and reps. And I had a formal plan, like a pyramid plan that went out months, you know, like I was very into it at that time. Yeah. This pain experience, and I took all of that with me, you know, like, and so then I was focusing on my form when I was just sitting throughout the day. I was focusing on my, like, it became a little bit pathological, my concept of exercise and carrying that over into my daily life. So for me with pain, I had to get rid of all notions of exercise and like formal sets and reps and specific things to do or specific ways of moving in order for me to start feeling better and moving better and getting better, because that structure and rigidity started to work against me. So what I started doing, and you've mentioned my Instagram page, I started taking pictures with my phone of just nature, started going outside, and it helped me to not think so much about what I was doing. This helped me stop thinking so much about my form or my movement and my lumbopelvic rhythm and my foot strike and all of these things that I became hyper-focused on. And I would just move through the environment and take pictures. And I would move my body into different positions because I was just using my phone to get a different composition. So for me, nature photography became my best way of moving and being active out in the world. And then, you know, it started just in my backyard, and then it would be in the neighborhood, and then it started to be short hikes, and then it started to be longer hikes. And we're really fortunate to live on the Continental Divide here in Colorado and the U.S. Ugh, I don't know my meters, but maybe you can do a conversion in the subtitles. But we have, you know, peaks that are up to like 13,000 feet. And so I could hike up to the Continental Divide, 12,000 feet, and was feeling really good. So that was my way of being active and being back in the world. But I had to lose the sense of rigidity and structure that came with formalized exercise. And I found I didn't enjoy that stuff as much anymore either. Like I just wanted to be outside and doing things. And that's what activity meant for me, and being able to walk my dog, and then snowboarding. I live in Colorado, and snowboarding is my other big thing. And I was so fearful to get back to snowboarding after my injury, and then surgery, and then ongoing pain. I was like, can I ever snowboard again? But my surgeon said, I don't see any reason why you can't. And I'll never forget the first time we went snowboarding after my injury. It was about 5 years since I had gotten hurt. And we were here in Winter Park, and we were on the lift going up the mountain, and I could just see the Continental Divide. I could see all the mountains, could see all the trees and these beautiful vistas. Mm. And I was like, oh my God, like the world is so beautiful and so amazing. And it's still there, you know, despite my absence from it for so long. It is still there. So it was like getting back out into the world again that made me want to be out in the world again, almost, and being active and being out in nature. For me, those two things go hand in hand. I don't want to be in a gym anymore. You know, the nature is my playground kind of thing. Now that I'm like years into it, I can go back to working out and things like that again. But I think that we really have to help people define where their joy is, what they enjoy doing, the ways that they enjoy being active. And it might not look like what we expect or what we want for people, but it's not about what we want for people or our goals for people. It's what they want and what they find joy in and what they want to get back to doing or start doing. And it could be things that you might not think of as active, like nature photography. But encouraging, or painting, like if people are painting and they're standing at an easel and painting, that is very active.
Yeah.
So I think that finding those things are really important. And also knowing that exercise isn't right for everyone. Like what we're learning with long COVID and with ME and chronic fatigue syndrome before, sometimes exercise can be counterproductive for some people. So we really have to go in with a lens of what's right for this person, what's going to make sense for this person. So for someone with chronic fatigue syndrome, activity is going to look much different than someone who wants to get back to running triathlon or participating in triathlons or heavy lifting and those sorts of things. Like each person is going to be different. And I'm saying all this from a place of when I was a firefighter, I was a peer fitness trainer. So that meant that I was one of the personal trainers for our firefighters, and we ran physical training in the mornings for our academies. So my answer to everything, to every problem, was lift heavy shit and or go for a run. Like those are my solutions for everything. Just go lift or go run, you'll be fine. It was my whole pain experience that kind of changed my perspective on things, and I realized how narrow my lens was at that time. That's not the solution for everybody.
Exactly. But it was interesting you mentioned, you know, walking in your backyard and then your neighborhood and then short hikes and longer hikes. So my question will be about load tolerance. So how do you build that tolerance to like an increased exercise?
Yeah, I am the worst person to ask for that because I'm a total idiot. And I, you know, like the people that boom and bust that go like 0 to 60 real fast, like that was me. Like when I started running, I did a blog series on this about what an idiot I was when I started running. So I would go in with a plan, be like, I'm going to walk a minute, jog a minute, or, you know, for a certain amount of distance, I was going to walk and jog. And then I'd start jogging and I'd be like, I'm going to run 3 miles. And that was what I would do every single time out. And then I would massively flare up and I wouldn't be able to run again for weeks or months. And I kept doing this over and over again. So I don't recommend this to anyone, but I want everyone to know that you can still be an idiot and still get better. Like eventually over time, now I can run and everything again and it's fine. So you can be an idiot and not do things right. And eventually it will work itself out over time. Our bodies are real pretty good at being self-limiting and forcing you to figure things out. But like what, for me, what was really cool about the hiking stuff and just going out further and further. I remember there was one time when there's a train in the background. So I apologize if it's loud since I don't have my headphones in, but I was hiking out along our Fraser River Trail. It was after one of our first snows. It was beautiful. The snow was piled on all of the rocks in the river. And I wanted to get a composition like over the water with all the trees framing the river. So I was stepping on these icy rocks over a snow melt river that is icy cold. And I got down real low. I was squatting with my butt just hovering inches over the water, and I'd taken a picture, and this is precarious. I had my phone over the river, and I took a picture, and I remember looking down going, holy shit, I'm squatting. Sorry, I keep swearing, but I was like, I am squatting, like full on squatting, where my butt's between my heels, just hovering over this river. And I didn't train for that. You know, I wasn't in the gym doing squats, training for that. It was just going out and doing something that I really enjoy doing and doing a little bit more of it each time that I was out, that eventually, you know, built up this capacity to be able to squat hovering over an icy cold river and not lose my phone in it. And so, like, I'm only sharing that to say, like, we can look outside of what we normally think of as activity and exercise and work with that, work with whatever it is for that person that gets them out the door, or not necessarily out the door, but gets them moving and more active and feeling joy in doing something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And then just finish off last question for our podcast. Can you give us three things, three tips, three advice that you would give to physios who are now dealing with people with chronic pain?
My first thing would be to listen first. To listen to that person's story. Before we started recording, we talked about your podcast you did with Peter O'Sullivan and how he starts with, tell me your story. Experiment with that, try that, see what happens, see where it leads, because being asked to tell our stories can lead to really meaningful information for you as a clinician in helping us to figure out our pain and what to do about it. It's that collaborative notion of bringing together the person's lived experience and expertise and knowledge with your clinical insights and expertise and training and knowledge and all of that together to best make sense of this situation and what to do about it. So I'd say listen first. Really, really, we can all become better listeners. We could all become better listeners. So that would be my first one. The second one, like we had talked about, that kind of fix it mentality. The second one is be comfortable being uncertain. You know, that just human existence is filled with uncertainty. Pain is filled with uncertainty. You know, pain is incredibly complex. People are incredibly complex. None of us have all the answers. You know, none of us do, and that's okay. So to be okay in that uncertainty, be comfortable with uncertainty. And then also be compassionate, not just with the patients that you're dealing with who are living with chronic pain, but with yourself too. Because treating people that are living with pain is hard work. It's difficult. It can be trying. So to not only come at treatment with a sense of compassion for the person who is living with pain, but for yourself too, that this stuff is hard. It's okay to get stuff wrong sometimes. It's okay to be awkward sometimes. It's okay not to have all the answers sometimes. It's okay to say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing sometimes. It's just about being compassionate with yourself and then doing better the next time.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks a lot, Joe. And just before we end our podcast, for our colleagues who want to start reading your blogs and follow you on social media, what was the best way to do it? Can you give us the details?
Yeah. So I'm on social media. I'm My Cup of Joe everywhere. MyCupPaJo. I'm mostly active on Twitter these days. So, and then also I'm going to share GAPPA Pain's social media handle is GAPPAPAIN, GAPPA Pain. And we're doing a lot of new exciting stuff there where we're bringing together clinicians, researchers, and people living with pain. So everyone keep your eyes out in that space too. And then my blog is mycupofjoe.com, that same spelling, mycupofjoe.com. I haven't been as active this last year, but there's tons of historical content on there that might be of some interest or use.
Perfect. Thanks again, Joe, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks everyone for being with us for this episode. And we hope we'll see you soon on Guida Galattica per Fisioterapisti. Bye.